Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
And good evening to our listeners, and welcome to Rated LGBT Radio. I'm Brody Levesque. Rob will be joining us here shortly. I'm going to cover some news items, as I'm sure most of you have been paying attention. The last 3 days have been incredibly busy for news cycle, to the point of where it's almost gotten, quite frankly, a little nutso. Some things that we need to cover that I think are really terribly important I want to talk about. In Georgia, we had a school district there that reversed its transgender-friendly bathroom policy, and this was after the board members and their staff and the students were threatened, and this was put out in a news release by the Pickens County School Board. Now, they changed their policy this week, and they were citing death threats and student harassment and vandalism of school property. The policy that had initially been put into play and allowed the transgender students to use the restrooms that aligned with their gender identity instead of a single-stall, gender-neutral bathroom. The board voted to reverse the policy, and this was done in an emergency meeting that was called by Superintendent Carlton Wilson, and this was reported by WSB out of Atlanta. In a statement, the district said, "The district understands and acknowledges that it has a responsibility to protect its staff and students. However, the district has concerns that it may not be able to meet those recently increased demands," and this was according to the school board. Parents had raised concerns about the bathroom policy in an October 14th school board meeting, and the county's board of education had noticed in an earlier news release that transgender students had requested to use the restroom, which the students were identifying with, and the school board and the student administration of the schools had allowed the student to do that. And it was at that point there was apparently some controversy. Multiple parents expressed concerns over that, and then according to the Atlantic Journal Constitution, it got a lot worse from that. In Florida, a similar situation had happened. A ruling was made in the 11th Circuit Court that applies to Georgia, Alabama, as well as Florida. And in that decision, the 11th Circuit had said that students should be able to use bathrooms according to the way they identified in gender. So we will be watching that story as it develops. As you know, the White House today has been in turmoil between a lot of issues going on with the Trump administration pointing fingers, the inquiry on Capitol Hill, which is now expanding as a result. The European Union's ambassador was hauled in front of a committee meeting today that went on for about nearly 10 hours. And at the end of that, we're still waiting on some further information as to what goes on with that. I'd also like to point out a couple of other things real quick here, too, before we go back into Washington news. We're looking at a couple of troubling things occurring with Facebook. And today there was a tweet from Bernice King, daughter of the late Dr. Martin Luther King. And I'm going to quote Bernice's tweet here. "I heard Mark Zuckerberg's free expression speech, which he referenced my father. I'd like to help Facebook better understand the challenges that Martin Luther King faced from disinformation campaigns that were launched by politicians. These campaigns created an atmosphere for his assassination." The speech that Dr. King's daughter was referring to was given earlier today at Georgetown University. There has been accusations that the Facebook CEO and some of the principal officers of the company have been leaning more towards a more conservative train of thought. There has been allegations of, you know, the fact that ads are being purchased that are quite frankly just, they're lying. And at this point, there's a lot of back and forth and controversy for that. So we fully expect more to happen on that lines. There was a loss today for not only the LGBTQ community. We lost an ally, but also for the people of Maryland, and particularly the city of Baltimore. Representative Elijah Cummings passed away earlier this morning. And it really is truly a loss. Congressman Cummings, in addition to his chairing of appropriations, was also noted for his strong advocacy for human and civil rights. He was a feature in Baltimore. I had actually met the congressman several times myself personally. He was just an incredible human being, and it really is a tragic loss to, like I said, our community, the LGBTQ community, but Baltimore, and quite frankly, the American public in general, that, you know, and he passed after a brief period of being hospitalized. So it's really pretty, pretty tragic. One of the statements that was made today, and the tributes were flowing in from everywhere, former United States Attorney General Eric Holder said this about the congressman: Elijah Cummings was the rarest of politicians. He was a man of substance and of grace. He was fierce in his determination to protect those without a voice and implacable in his search for the truth. Our nation has lost a truly great public servant. And that's so, so true. There was a report that was also issued earlier today, switching it up a little bit here. Let's talk a little bit about teen suicide. And this is going to be also something that we're going to be talking about when we get into our conversation and we talk with our guest tonight, hopefully here pretty shortly. We're having some technical difficulties, so we're trying to sort those out. But from 2007 to 2017, the number of suicides among people ages 10 to 24 suddenly increased 56%. Now, that is a fairly, you know, high ratio. And the problem that the Washington Post noted is that that statistic is outstripping all other age groups. And if you suddenly had kids dying of a new disease or infection in this area, there would be a huge, huge outcry. And I think that one of the things that we also have to be very attentive to in the LGBTQI community, of course, is that we have a alarming amount of our young people who oftentimes find themselves in non-affirming situations, or worse, they're bullied. And today, of course, is Spirit Day, which is a day that we recognize to advocate against bullying. Bullying is probably one of the number one leading causes of self-harm in LGBTQI youth. And I know from my experience as a journalist, I've covered entirely way too many deaths over the years that were directly attributed, and these are by LGBTQI youth, principally gay youth and transgender youth who have, and trans youth of color who have been bullied and extensively. And it does have an impact, and it really is something that, you know, we need to talk about. It's also something that we need to address, I think, more. A friend of the show and a good friend of mine, Brandon Wolf, and a group of folks are actually in Columbus, Ohio today, and they're meeting to talk about mental health and self-care and how identity impacts, you know, recovery and coming back. And I think that, you know, today being Spirit Day and, of course, being against bullying, this is kind of, you know, a good day to reflect and quite frankly, you know, have that discussion. So now, earlier I had referenced the European Union Ambassador Sunderland's testimony on Capitol Hill, which went on for about 10 hours. The ambassador essentially told Congress that President Trump had wanted Ukraine's new government to investigate the 2016 election and then a natural gas company, a Ukrainian company that was tied to then Vice President Joe Biden's son, Hunter. And this was what the ambassador was queried about for probably about a good 10 hours on Capitol Hill. So it got a little hairy. In the Middle East, of course, everybody's keeping an eye on the situation in northern Syria and the situation with the Turks. The president announced earlier that the Turkish government had agreed to a pause in the advance of their troops and their military operations against the Kurds. At this point, also, because the United States has withdrawn its forces and pulled back, the government of Russian President Vladimir Putin has put Russian troops along with troops from the government of Syria into position. So it's getting to the point where nobody's exactly sure what the situation is over there. It's kind of fluid. The Trump administration is maintaining that they have this under control. That's kind of one of those things where, you know, I find that, you know, kind of debatable. So let's cover some other news. And again, I'm kind of sitting here waiting for our technology problem to get resolved. We're having an issue with the air boards, which means that Rob, unfortunately, right now is unable to get on the board, so I've got the show. So just bear with me, please. I think the, we had a kind of a really sad thing happen, and this is going back to today being, you know, today being Spirit Day and talking about bullying and talking about mental health and talking about challenges in mental health. A very, very sad story out of San Francisco. And there was a beloved trans activist. She was an actress. She was a comedian. Actually, she was known nationally, Daphne Dorman. And she was 44. And she died last Friday, and she had committed suicide. And in the early morning hours, she did a Facebook post, and she said, and I'm going to quote her, "I'm sorry. I thought about this a lot before this morning. How do you say goodbye? And I'm sorry, and I love you to all the beautiful souls that you know for the last time." And then she continues on. The trans community in particular, and I've said this before here on the broadcast with Rob, I've said it in some of the op-ed pieces that I've written, and I've said it to my fellow editors and colleagues in the press. The trans community is at the tip of the spear, and right now it's under siege. Between the assault by the Trump administration on transgender health rights currently to the transgender military health, military ban and then the attacks on the trans community in general. This is a community that is in danger. And this is a community that truly needs the support of the entire community. And when, you know, things that are said that are regrettable, particularly transphobic remarks or any type of remarks that belittle the community or belittle the members of the community. Today we learned that we have yet another victim, a trans woman of color, again, who was murdered, the 22nd one this year. This is something that needs to be addressed. This is something that is a serious problem, and this is something that we really, truly need to be able to resolve. And I think that this is one of the things where everybody, quite frankly, needs to be involved in this. And so this is one of the things that I think that we need to have more of these discussions. And I think this is something that people need to reflect on. And I really, truly believe that we really, truly need to have these discussions more and more at length. It's an incredible thing to me that we have an entire community of people, and they just simply are not getting the support that they should. And I just personally, this is my own personal opinion now, but I just think this is incredibly wrong. And I think this is something that we truly need to address and we need to look at. So these are some of the things that, you know, I'd like to see addressed. And again, my apologies for, you know, the delay here in getting the show rolling with our guest, who hopefully will be able to get this resolved shortly. And the technical problem, unfortunately, means that we can't bring anyone onto the show because I'm on a live line, which means I can talk to you folks, the listeners, but I'm unable to interview the guest or anybody because I don't know where they are and I can't see them. So that's kind of a little bit of a conundrum for me, as it were. Some of the other things that I think that, you know, when we talk about, you know, being affirming and, you know, especially with the kids, you know, we really need to concentrate on our youth, especially on a day like today. The statistics coming out of the Centers for Disease Control and some of the others that have done these studies, when you look at the homeless populations in this country, and you tend to see that the numbers are skewed more towards LGBTQ youth and people that are homeless between the ages of, say, 14 to 24. And here in California in particular, we have a huge, huge homeless problem. The city of Los Angeles, the city of Santa Cruz, the city of San Francisco, basically any of the urban centers here in California are just, you know, they're overwhelmed. Statistically, nearly a quarter of all homeless people in the United States are in California. And so that means that there's an absolute need for services. There is a need for people to reach out. There is a need for us as a community to pull together and to work within the parameters of social services, our LGBT centers, which I think do a marvelous job, and, you know, our organizations that are out there to address this. We also need to work directly with our elected officials and our city officials, and we need to work in working towards solutions. You know, it, one of the things that I hear a lot as a journalist is people talk in abstract about the problem. But what I'm not hearing, and what I think we really need to hear, is concrete, affordable solutions to this problem. And as long as the economic things and the conditions in the country are what they are, we're going to continue to see this problem, you know, roll forward and really skew. So this is something that needs to be addressed. So, and again, you know, and I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but with without Rob having control of the airboard, I'm just sitting here kind of flying in the blind. So you're just kind of getting me as I'm talking and just looking through the news that I covered today and some of the issues that I think are important to our community. And I think that these are things that are, you know, important to all of us. I'm going to take a quick look at my friend Nico Lang's Out Magazine, and let's take a look and see what Nico's got going on this week. So some of the things we get from the editors picked. The one problem that occurred this week was Senator Elizabeth Warren in the CNN HRC town hall had a little bit of a gaffe, and Nico wrote about this, and it was a rare gaffe from Senator Warren on LGBTQ rights, but during last Thursday's forum on equality among the 2020 Democratic presidential candidates, moderator Chris Cuomo had asked Warren if she believed that, quote, a crime against someone who's transgender should be charged as a hate crime. Now, Warren, who is normally probably one of the most vocal supporters of LGBTQI rights, at least among the Democratic field, she almost seemed like she was dodging the question. And this is what she said, and this is as Nico reported. Senator Warren, you know, I think we could, if we think that that's going to be the most effective way to make a change, she said. So I'm certainly, I'm open to this, but I'll tell you what I really want. I want a Justice Department that takes this seriously. I want to create a Justice Department to say these crimes matter. Okay. Now, observers in the press and political observers quickly noted, okay, that there seemed to be a difference between the senator saying she was open to prosecuting anti-trans violence as a hate crime and actually doing so. So she had stated in an LGBTQI platform released earlier of the day, Thursday, the day of the forum, that she was open to decriminalizing sex work. And she, you know, this was following a vote for the two bills that went through that were anti-sex trafficking bills that essentially shut down the online resources that were helping any sex workers and escorts safely screen their clients. Warren, on the other hand, herself has yet to come out formally in favor of decriminalization. She just merely said she's willing to consider the possibility. She had said, and I'm quoting the senator, "Sex workers, like all workers, deserve autonomy and are particularly vulnerable to physical and financial abuse and hardship." Now, political noted, as Nico took a note of, that as they were looking at the roundup of the event, Politico was saying, well, Warren, quote, failed to take a strong position, including gender identity protections and hate crime legislation. And this was occurring while critics on Twitter claimed that the candidate equivocated on the issue. In fact, one person tweeted out, Elizabeth Warren equivocated on whether crimes against trans folks should be classified as hate crimes. Now, she's since, and it's certainly the surprising controversy given, you know, the headlines from her previous forum where she literally read the names of the trans people that had been killed at that point at in 2019. I think at that point's forum, I think there were 20 of our trans sisters who had been murdered. But she responded to a statement to Nico and Out Magazine, and she clarified that she wasn't equivocating. She said that she is in full support of trans-inclusive hate crime laws. She claimed the point she had hoped to make was that a Warren administration would go further by addressing the root of anti-trans violence. This is something that I think is kind of critical to note. There is, aside from this, there is a definite pandemic, and this is what I will call it, of the murder of Black and Latina trans women. And it's really gotten to the point where it is extremely serious and it must be addressed. This is not an issue that should be dropped. This is not an issue that should be just glossed over, especially not in a political sense. This is an issue that needs to be addressed. And quite frankly, we need to be in a position as a community as a whole to address this issue. We need to go to these politicians. We know, and here's the thing, and I'm going to make this right up front a statement here. We need to be able to go to state houses, city halls. We need to have a local and state level push with district attorneys, with police departments, with sheriff's departments, any kind of law enforcement agency. We need to have a push that these crimes are happening. They need to stop. And I think that while part of the problem, quite frankly, is the fact that the sex workers are probably most at risk, and in many cases of these Black and Latina trans women being killed are in fact sex workers or escorts, that we need to have a process here where we can not only decriminalize that, but I think more importantly than that, we also need to be in a position where we can offer them solid, and I mean rock solid support. But that's got to be done at a city and state level. I mean, it's all well and good to talk about change at a federal level, but the reality of change at a federal level is that, you know, it's like watching ice melt on a glacier. Well, pardon the pun, these days with climate change, I'm sure there'll be someone arguing, well, that's happening pretty quickly. But the, my point in using that metaphor is that it's glacial. It takes forever. I think that we need to work and concentrate on initiatives. And this could even be done in, you know, the red states that are not affirming. I think that we need to go into these communities. And the most important thing, and I cannot stress this enough, is that the trans community absolutely has to be accepted without any, you know, equivocation from anybody. You know, we need to fully embrace this community. And I think for many that I've spoken to, they don't feel that that's there. And I think that's something we need to work on. I realize that, again, a lot of this is coming from especially the religious right, the Christian right. But I still don't see it as something that is insurmountable. And I really think that this is something that, you know, we need to do. You know, we've got a federal hate crime law, the Matthew Shepard, James Byrne Act. And I think that what we need to do, though, is we need to at least push, okay, to get fully inclusive hate crime legislation. And we've got 37 states out there that haven't done that. We've got 13 states, and this is really, it just staggers the imagination. We have 13 states, including Arizona and Texas, okay, which only cover sexual orientation. Then we have three who have no hate crime laws on the books at all, including Wyoming, which is where Matthew Shepard was from, and it was the Matthew Shepard crime, the murder, that spurred on the legislation in his name. So this is why I'm saying we need to have a stronger push at a local and a state level. We need to do something to get these people on board. And I think that the other part of it, too, you know, is that a lot of these trans women are being killed by a boyfriend or by a sexual partner or a significant domestic partner. And this, the violence against them is something that needs to be addressed, and we need to have resources for them. And we need to be able to, you know, pull this together in such a way that we have the ability to offer something concrete. So it's one of those things that I think that, you know, we need to think about.
Yeah,
especially since – and there you are.
You absolutely do, bro.
I have just been with you, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, sort of. I do apologize to everybody listening that we have had technical difficulties. I am remote, and unfortunately, as Murphy's Law would have it, the internet connection where I am was non-existent. Our guest does not appear to be on the board, so hopefully he's listening and will call in. Brody done an excellent job in terms of I've been able to listen in and, you know, fascinating commentary. Absolutely. We should probably touch on, hopefully, Curtis will call back in and we can get his commentary on. But this, one of the things that triggered, oh, there he is, as a matter of fact. Hold on, let's get him on. Curtis, thank you for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, I apologize for all the technical difficulties.
Let me set us up a little bit.
Yeah. One of the issues that came up was in Tampa, Florida, or regarding Tampa, Florida, U.S. District Judge William Young, who is a Trump appointee, struck down the ban that Tampa had passed on conversion or reparative therapy for minors in Tampa, Florida. His ruling was confusing. It was about the fact that Tampa didn't have jurisdiction. It didn't really make a lot of sense. But Curtis, I'm going to throw it to you. What were your feelings about that ruling and the idea of conversion therapy for minors in general?
You know, it seems to me with this particular ruling that it's just that it kind of got muddled, and I saw this a lot in Illinois when you were trying to do it there, that the right, we'll say, the right, the opposing party, just throws all of these facts in the way. Oh, well, this will prevent youth from getting talk therapy, or this will prevent, the youth from getting certain types of therapies that they'll need. And the truth of the matter is, no, it won't. It won't do that. And that notion is ridiculous. And so, we've got all these bans that people are talking about right now. And I think it's great. I think it's absolutely great. But people get scared of the word ban sometimes. And I think that that's also what happened with this. No judge wants to have the word ban on their record that they've banned something, right?
Right.
Overall, I'm just not happy with the situation. We need to really bring down the books on these things. This is ridiculous that we've been having conversion therapy for a long time, and it's been proven that it is a problem, and several states have outlawed it. It just baffles me that people are still, no, the fact of the matter is it's abuse, and that's hard stop. That's just how I think.
Yeah, I think that is a hard problem, because a lot of people hear some of the premise of it. I know on a talk radio I called into because they were talking about it. Their viewpoint on it was, well, gee, as teenagers are growing up, and we all of us have deal with our sexuality and everything else, what is wrong with a therapist just kind of helping you walk through your sexual identity issues? And it's like, no, that isn't what this is. That's not,
right.
That's not what this is at all. And I called in and clarified it, and they Googled it then while I was talking to them and saw the real facts behind conversion therapy. Curtis, I want to ask you, though, about your organization, Conversion Therapy Dropout Network.
Yeah.
Fairly new organization. What is your mission, and how did you get started with it?
So our mission is to bridge the gap between conversion therapy survivors. And it got started, I was at a conference, the Creating Change Conference, but I was there, and I had spoken with another survivor who had reached out to me while they were there. We'd had some mutual connections, and they asked me, they're like, well, is there like an organization for conversion therapy survivors, like a community? And I mean, there are little pocket communities that have popped up around the country, but there's no organization that is there specifically to cater to the needs of the conversion therapy survivor, right? And so that's where I got the idea, is I wanted to create this network of conversion therapy survivors and kind of stand as a pillar to other survivors and say, hey, we went through the same thing you did, and we know how you feel. We can relate to your experience. You're not alone, and here's the great community that we've built up around it, even though we've experienced this trauma. And so that's kind of what I set out to do. And so far it's going really good.
Brody?
I think one of the things that needs to be pointed out, and in full disclosure, I've known Curtis for a minute, is mm-hmm. that the work that he's doing is very critically important, because as I was saying earlier when I was doing my solo performance, one of the things that needs to be addressed, and today being Spirit Day, I consider conversion therapy a form of bullying. I personally, this is just me now, I deem it as institutionalized bullying. And I think that what Curtis is doing with his organization is something that's critically important, because I have, over the years as a journalist, met and talked with many, many, many people who have, unfortunately had reparative or conversion therapy experiences. They were either forced into it by their families or by their churches. And there's lasting damage, almost a sense of PTSD, post-traumatic coming out of it. And that, it's very difficult for them to be able to communicate their fears, because there's no common ground. They can go in and talk to therapists, and they can talk to other LGBTQI members of the community and people. But, it's really a situation of, if you've been through it, then you understand. It really boils down to that. If you'll remember, Rob, we had on the show John Becker, a friend of the show, good friend of mine, and he was the one that went to Minnesota, and they, for Truth Wins Out, Wayne Besson and that organization, and they busted then-Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann's husband, Dr. Marcus Bachmann, for running reparative therapy sessions in Minnesota, which wasn't really technically allowed. Curtis, one of the things that you and I have talked about many times in the past, and I kind of like you to tell our listeners, what's the most important thing, in your opinion, in structuring recovery right after coming out of conversion therapy?
You know, for, I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but one thing that I really, that I've noticed a lot of, and one thing that, you know, really helped me is just having someone to talk to, someone that you can tell all of these things to, someone that's not going to turn around and say, oh, well, you know, you should keep doing this. So not someone that's supportive of the, of the so-called therapy, but rather just someone that's going to listen and someone that you can just kind of talk at and just kind of, and then they bounce it back to you. And it's just kind of a form of processing. And I think that that's what really happened when I got the idea for this organization. When I was talking to that other survivors, they just wanted someone to talk to who understood what they went through or that could just talk to them about it, about their experience and how they felt, because they were trying to process this internally, but it just, it's hard. It's very hard to process internally. And so that's the one thing that I had that really helped me. I had friends that I was able to talk to. And that's really what I hear a lot of, is just, you know, talking to people about it and spreading the word about it, it really helps. It's almost cathartic to, it is cathartic to talk about it. And so that's really the number one thing, is that the best thing for someone that's just coming out of it or someone that's been through it and really hasn't talked about it before is they really, you know, they want to talk about it, even if it's hard and they may not necessarily be able to talk to it about it a long time, but it's something that you got to talk about it, you know? So that's really the number one thing, I think, for people, is that just having an ear to listen to listen to them.
Rob? Well, it looks like Rob's on mute. Curtis? That happens. You know, we'll just press on until he's able to rejoin us. One of the things that I don't think really people understand, it's something that I think you should probably explain to our listeners too, is, you know, conversion therapy really does damage a person. I mean, it's traumatic because it strips away at the essence of who you are. You know, you and I've chatted about this before, but, you know, tell our listeners what, you know, what is it like for you to, you know, have to go through that? I mean, it's almost as if, you know, your whole sense of self is torn apart. And without bringing up anything, you know, horribly painful, but just kind of give us an idea, because it's a type of thing that I'm sure does have commonality throughout all the survivors in the network, if you don't mind.
Well, of course. Yeah, no. I mean, I'm very open about my experience. I've talked about it so many times that, you know, almost there's almost nothing that's off limits for me. But yeah, you know, that was the main point that I really made in my testimony in Illinois, was that this was an attempt to strip my humanity away, strip everything away from me, take everything away, and then rebuild myself in an image that this counselor, will say, this counselor had envisioned for me, and he thought in his interpretation of what it would be to be a man and a godly man, right? And so that's very mm-hmm. damaging, you know. For me, it was, well, you know, I went through an emo phase, so I had the very long hair. So it was the, you know, you've got the long hair mm-hmm. and it's very effeminate, so, you know, we should cut that shorter. You know, you shouldn't hang around girls all the time because they're going to make you more effeminate. And, you know, you're involved in theater, which is not really a masculine characteristic activity that you should be doing. So maybe you should, you know, take up this hobby of yours. You said that you do like music, so maybe go be in a band. Or you don't like sports, but maybe you should go hang out with these other men more. And so it was just very, like, very destructive to me, because here I have all of these things in my life that I identify with, all these things that I enjoy, and now all of a sudden they're being ripped away from me because they're not making me the man that I'm supposed to be, right? And so you can see that time and time again where people, you know, their clothing choices aren't right, or the way that they talk aren't right, or the way that they sit aren't right. And it's just, it's very damaging, and it adds almost a sense of paranoia, really. It's like you start second-guessing yourself. Well, is this something that I should be doing, or is this something that I shouldn't be doing? Can I do this, you know? And so it's very, that was just like my main point with my whole testimony was this was really an attempt to recreate me in someone else's image against my will, and that I lost my sense of identity and I didn't know who I was anymore. I didn't know, you know, who Curtis was. I just knew what I was being told and fed. And it's very strange because for me, I developed a sense of duality where it's like, well, no, I know who I am. I know who I am. And I know I like these things. I'm, you know, I shouldn't have to change. But at the same time, when you're getting all of this abuse and all of this, this mental instability, you start guessing, well, maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong. Like, maybe, you know, I'm not supposed to be this way. And then it even adds another layer when you can't stop liking those things and you can't stop, you know, acting in certain ways because that's just who you are. And so then it gets into the even deeper levels of, well, you're not trying hard enough. You're not trying hard enough. You're not trying to be the man that you're supposed to be. You're not, you know, you're not listening. You're not following the directions. You're doing a wrong thing, right? And so it just, all these levels going back to the sense of identity, right?
Well, part of the problem, too, is that, you're right. I think the other issue here is that it's a warped viewpoint of the societal, cultural, maybe the Christian rights viewpoint of what their perception of what being masculine and a man is, and it's very stereotypical, and it doesn't fit within the parameters of reality. Your organization is to help people that have walked through this and have come out the other side. What are some of the important things that you guys are hoping to accomplish going forward?
So, like I said, one of the big things that I have been really talking about a lot is that I want to stand as a pillar, kind of like a beacon of light to other survivors or even those that are currently going through it. And even though they can't reach out, they know we exist. Because I didn't have that. When I was going through my conversion therapy, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know this was conversion therapy. Sure. I didn't even know what a pride parade was at that time. So it was, just breaking that isolation and really breaking that radio silence almost, that, hey, we're here, we've been through this, we've come to the other side, you can too, and you can join us, let us be there for you when you need us, you know. And so that's kind of really my goal, that, you know, building commonalities and a community of people so that we can say, this is happening, and here's all the people it's happened to, right? Just kind of showing the how widespread it is, because a lot of people don't even know that this is happening. You know, I hear a lot of the time that I didn't know this was happening. So so our other mission on that is to also educate that, yes, this is happening. Here's some of the parameters of how it happens, and here's all the people that it's happened to, and this is just a small number of us. There are a lot more, right? And so those are kind of the two facets that I'm really focusing on, the kind of the beacon of light aspect, as it were, and the education, really.
Well, there had been for a long time in the United States, there had been a couple of organizations that all they did was advocate for conversion therapy or the X-Gay. We call it the X-Gay ministry, and most of them have actually shut down as people have come to determine that in reality there is actually no such thing as X-Gay. I think the hardest part of that, as you know, is getting, you know, the opposition, if you want to call them that, to understand that sexual orientation, like gender identity, is an immutable characteristic of a human being. Whether or not they want to accept that, it's irrelevant. It's a fact. Now, I know that you guys are getting together in Los Angeles over the weekend. You guys are LA-based. Talk to me a little bit about what you've got going for this weekend.
Yeah, so actually we've got two things this weekend. We're actually going to be doing – we're actually going to have a booth at the Models of Pride Fair on Saturday. But then our event is on Sunday at 3 o'clock. We're going to be doing kind of a conversion therapy survivor roundtable. And it's not really – going to be super structured. It's going to be more of just coming together and meeting other survivors, sharing your stories, kind of talking about the issues that we're facing, talking about the issues within, you know, politics and what's happening with that. But really, it's you know, just us coming together as a community of survivors and starting to build that community. And just, you know, like I said, having an ear to talk to, because there are things that, you know, only survivors can understand. And so that's the community that I'm trying to build, and that's what we're going to be attempting to do on Sunday.
Okay, so
be pretty successful.
If you are in the greater Los Angeles area, down to San Diego, San Ysidro, out to Palm Springs, or north to Santa Barbara, basically the Southland, if you wanted to attend Curtis's two events, let's talk about the first one. What's the time, and where would they go?
So it's all on modelsofpride.org. I believe it's .org. From there, I'm not sure if there's still time to sign up for it, but it is put on by the LGBT Center here in Los Angeles. So you would go there and you would sign up, and it is at USC, I think, but I'm probably wrong. but it's an all-day institute. Yeah, isn't that great? It's an all-day institute, but our particular portion of it will be at 11:30 is when it starts, where all the vendors and the organizations will be out there. And then on
Sunday.
Do what?
On Sunday.
Oh, on Sunday, it's 3 o'clock. And it's going to be at a peer space location. So if you want more information on that, you can check out our Facebook. We're Conversion Therapy Dropout Network. And you'll find our event page there, and you can mark yourself as going. I appreciate that so that I know how many people to expect. And there you can grab the address. It is going to be more of a cozy residential area. So it's a nice little area that we're going to be in. That's at 3 o'clock on Sunday, and that'll run until about six or whenever people decide they're ready to go.
Okay. Sounds fair. Let's talk a little bit about, the need for education. This is one of the things that, you know, you've mentioned. And of course, I believe, you know, quite firmly that this is something that we need to get out there is that, and it's not just the kids that we need to address this on. I think we also need to talk directly to parents, and we need to talk to educators, administrators in school systems. And we do need to talk to faith leaders that are at least willing to listen. So what are some of the things that you would say to them about why this talk therapy, conversion therapy, reparative therapy, it really is so damaging? I mean, why does this need to go away?
Right. Well, I mean, it really goes down to just what therapy is in general. You know, it's therapy is not something that you walk into with an issue, right? A supposed issue, and you walk in, you say, all right, I have this problem. And then the therapist goes, okay, well, I know how to fix it. We're going to do X, Y, Z, and we're going to arrive at solution one. And that's it, right? That's not how therapy works, right? There are many paths, there are many ways to do it, and there are multiple outcomes depending on what happens. So that's the first thing that really sets conversion therapy apart, is that it doesn't follow, you know, how therapy works typically. The second thing is that it's, you know, using faith or using, you know, any therapeutical practices to try and recreate someone into what you think they should be is entirely problematic as well, especially when you take into consideration that these are youth. They're still developing, you know, their personalities, they're still developing their sexuality and their sense of being. And then you come in and you tell them, nope, you're absolutely wrong. You've made all the wrong choices. Let me fix you. You know, that's entirely damaging as well. And then on top of that, you have the religious aspect where now you've got these religious leaders coming in saying you're going to be damned to an eternity of hell if you don't change the way that you're living your life, putting, you know, mortal fear into them. And so now they're terrified of what comes after life, right? And so it just leads to a whole lot of problems with, you know, isolation. You know, typically youth are ripped away from their friends that they've been with because they're gay affirming. And, you know, sometimes you're taken out of school. That was one thing with mine, is that I was so scared I was going to be taken out of school and taken away from people to where I could get away from this. And, you know, and then another facet is, you know, the family issues, that the families are instructed how to act, how to be with this youth, and now all of a sudden everything they know in their life is completely changed and it feels like the entire world is against you. So that's really what it boils down to, is just the isolation, the loss of identity, and the mortal fear that is put into you, and even, you know, physical fear for those that have been through physical abuse during these practices, you know. But the problem with conversion therapy that is so hard for people to understand and really get is that it's not the same for every person. It's going to vary from person to person, but the damage that they feel, the abuse and the trauma is very similar for all of them. And you can't explain it. You can't explain it to other people that don't understand. And that's what makes it so hard.
Well, I know that one of the things that I noticed in my reporting is that, and you just mentioned it, the whole idea to conversion therapy sometimes in some places turns into what they call adversion therapy, because they will, for example, you know, show basically images of, you know, the genders, usually male, to male, and then they will deliver electrical shocks to the genitals and, you know, it to get them, you know, to adverse. There was a movie that I remember seeing that for the first time in 2003. Mm-hmm. It was called Latter Days. And it was a comedy drama about a young closeted Mormon missionary and his openly gay neighbor in Los Angeles. Part of the film dealt with, of course, obviously the Mormon church being as homophobic as it is, but the adversion therapy that they inflicted on the kid, you know, to cure him. You know, that's the one thing that, you know, I've reported on and I've heard from a lot of people is they use that word cure.
Right.
As if, you know, homosexuality is a disease, you know.
Yeah, like a virus that you pick up, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like a virus. Like, you know, I just got infected by the unicorn disease. I'm sorry. I'm going to jump out of a closet and be fabulous all day long. It's ridiculous. I mean, but it's, you know, exactly. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, okay. No, it's absolutely ridiculous. Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, that I think, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I mean, you know, that is something that you hear a lot, is the electroshock aspect. I know people that have had that done to them, and it seems like something that would happen, you know, back in the Victorian ages, and, you know, even then, you know, they did do that. But it blows my mind, and I can't imagine how other people feel that haven't been through this, to know that this is happening. Actively happening, and it's just,
yeah, it's barbaric.
Me.
I'm sorry, it's just, yeah, it's barbaric. I you know, it's bad enough when you try and force, you know, change upon someone, and again, And in a nod to today's Spirit Day about, you know, anti-bullying, but I maintain that this is a form of institutionalized bullying, because you are bullying a person about something they can't change. You know, I'm probably going to get a bunch of hate emails now from Kristen Wright.
Actually,
they don't like me.
So, yeah, I got bumped off, you guys. I really apologize. I would actually, from what you're saying, though, Brody, I would take it even further. I don't think this is bullying. I think this is absolute child and, you know, human rights abuse. I mean, this is beyond simple bullying. You know, and I know people who have taken it, the scars, to their adult years, and committed suicide over it. It is
absolutely
the worst kind of damage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Curtis, I really want to thank you for coming on tonight. I apologize for all our technical difficulties. And Brody, kudos and alms and everything to you. You really had to carry this very strongly tonight, and it's so appreciated in everything you do. Curtis, do you have any final words for us on this?
Yeah, I just want to kind of leave off, you know, something that really resonates with me, that one of my board members, Claire Kilman, said. She said, "America's best kept secret is our ability to abuse our children." And so that really sticks out with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now this issue of conversion therapy affects all intersections of the LGBTQ+ community. You know, it's, you know, sure, I'm standing here as a cis white male, but it affects everyone, you know. And that's what makes it even more insidious, you know, is that this is an issue that everyone's doing it, you know, across the board.
Yeah. Yeah, and bless you for the work you're doing, because as I said, I know people who have taken this damage, you know, on with them even past acceptance. They've been accepted. They've, you know, felt like they forgave the past, and it still haunts them. And so I think your organization's work and what you're, you know, endeavoring to do to help the PTSD that so many people are still carrying is just super important work. And so I really want to give you kudos and thanks for being out there for people and helping people who can't help themselves. And with that, and I apologize to our listeners, it's been a little more creative, shall we call it that way, version of Rated LGBT Radio tonight. And we look forward to talking to you again next week. Please tell all your friends to look us up on their podcast app and subscribe. We really appreciate it. And we appreciate your feedback, and we appreciate your time listening to us very much so. We will be back, like I said, again next week with another timely, important topic. You do not want to miss it. Also, listen to our past episodes. They're all available, and many of them are as pertinent at this minute as the day we recorded them. For Brody and myself, I would love to bid you a wonderful good night, good day, good afternoon. We will talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio.